second reading today is not 2 Kings, but is from the book of Deuteronomy in the 26th chapter. So I can't tell you what page it's on. You'll have to look for it. Deuteronomy chapter 26. When you have come into the land that the Lord your God is giving you as an inheritance to possess, and you possess it and settle in it, you shall take some of the first of all the fruit of the ground, which you harvest from the land that the Lord your God is giving you, and you shall put it in a basket, and go to the place the Lord your God will choose as a dwelling for God's name. You shall go to the priest who's in the office at that time and say, "Today I declare to the Lord your God that I have come into the land that the Lord swore to our ancestors to give us." When the priest takes the basket from your hand and sets it down before the altar of the Lord your God, you shall make this response before the Lord. "A wandering Aramean was my ancestor. He went down into Egypt and lived there as an alien, few in number, and there became a great nation, mighty and populous. When the Egyptians treated us harshly and afflicted us by imposing hard labor on us, we cried to the Lord, the God of our ancestors, who heard our voice and saw our affliction, our toil, and our oppression. God brought us out of Egypt with a mighty hand and an outstretched arm, with a terrifying display of power, with signs and wonders. God brought us into this place and gave us this land, a land flowing with milk and honey. So now I bring the first of the fruit of the ground that you, O Lord, have given me. You shall set it down before the Lord your God and bow before your God. Then you, together with the Levites and the immigrants who reside among you, shall celebrate with all the bounty the Lord your God has given to you and to your house. When you finish paying all the tithe of your produce in the third year, which is the year of the tithe, giving it to the Levites, the immigrants, the orphans, the widows, so they may eat their fill within the towns, then you shall say to your God, 'I have removed the sacred portion from the house.' In our hearing, our speaking, our living.
May God bless your grace.
Well, I hated to not be here last week. I really always love Pledge Sunday, and especially love when we come for the blessing, because it feels like we're blessing each other. Thank you. We had a wonderful response last week. Thank you for such a great response to the first Sunday for our pledges. Paul last week read my note to you where I mentioned a fig bush story. I realized I was terribly remiss last summer when I did not offer my annual garden sermon where I delineate my garden woes and mishaps. So I'm going to make up for it a little bit. A couple of years ago, I think I mentioned that we had planted a fig tree in our backyard, a young, really small seedling, really. And I know you've wondered what's happened since then, so I'll... I chose to plant the fig bush because, for starters, we like figs. And it's such a biblical plant. Figs show up 50 times in the Bible. First with Adam, but I'll let you remember what that allusion is to. And then I had noticed one day that our neighbors had a young fig tree. And so then I had fig envy added to the mix. So that spring I just had to plant this little fig tree. But the following Thanksgiving, we had a horde of people and dogs at the house, and after all that was over, I looked out and the little fig bush was nowhere to be seen. I know, it's sad. Apparently one or two dogs had decided that fig twigs was a great appetizer for Thanksgiving and had eaten them down to the ground. I thought I'd just try again in the spring with another planting, but lo and behold, that spring there was a little shoot coming up from the fig bush. Well, the following winter was a really, really harsh one. And I mean, this poor little fig thing looked deader than dead. Thought, okay, all right, maybe it's a sign from God. I don't know. So on this went, season after season, until this past spring, when lo and behold, it starts growing and having actual leaves. And now it's like 3.5, 4 feet tall. So determined that this thing shall survive. So back a few weeks ago when we had that terrible cold snap and it got into the low 20s, Paul and I went and wrapped it with burlap and dead leaves and plastic and more burlap and bricks. And the dog no longer tries to eat it. In fact, at first he would not go anywhere near it. And finally decided the best he could do was to help water it. I am an optimist. I have great hope that finally one day we will enjoy homegrown figs. Stay tuned. Which brings me finally to the scripture passage. This is an ancient liturgy. And it's describing the instructions Moses gave to the people about how when they finally enter into the promised land after decades of wandering, about the first thing they are to do once they get settled in is they are to bring upon arriving the first fruits of what they plant, the bikurim. The first and choicest ripened fruits from the orchard and from the land. And yes, that included figs. It was an offering of thanks. And I wonder how much trust that had to take after being in the wilderness all those years and eating manna and having nothing and wondering where the next meal would come from, if it would come. Did they worry? Did they hesitate? Finally got some food. I really have to give some of it away? What if it goes away? What if there's a drought? What if? But they gave. And they celebrated it. Not just that first year, but every year after that to the present. And it became a pattern for Jews, and I assume Muslims, and for Christians alike. We are to give thanks and offer first fruits. It's gonna be real hard for me to let go of that first fig. And besides, rumor has it God hates figs. Sorry, I just had to throw that in. According to the Jewish tradition, first fruit offerings were made of the 7 species native to the land: wheat and barley and grapes and figs, pomegranates, olives, and dates. Doesn't that sound delicious? Around here, we might bring a basket of okra and sweet potatoes and collard greens and peaches with a bag of stone ground grits thrown in for good measure. There was a blessing at first fruits, and then again at the end of harvest season, which is where we are now. And the offering was supposed to be abundant because it was going to be given to all the groups that could not provide for themselves, that did not own land. The widows, the orphans, the immigrants, the Levites who could not own land themselves. The people without means. It became the basis for their year-round generosity. That offering ensured the entire community would share in God's abundance. But it wasn't just about the food they brought in their basket. It's also about the story. They were to present the basket and tell the story. Story of how their people had been enslaved in Egypt, how Moses, led by God, had led the people to freedom, how they wandered for year after year after year, how life had been so hard and so unjust, and then God had brought them unto this beautiful, beautiful land. And it wasn't just the people who actually had lived that telling it, it was the generations after telling it in the first person, as though it had happened to them. Why did that matter? It mattered because it became their identity. It helped form them as God's people. It recentered them. It kept their perspective clear. A wandering Aramean was my ancestor. That's the equivalent of saying a destitute vagrant is who I come from. That's my people. I come from nothing. The reference, of course, is to Jacob, who fled his brother and for a while wandered in the desert with nothing. It is a recognition of humble, fragile beginnings. You may or may not have listened to the hearings this week. And no matter what else any of us heard, we were graced with these stories of men and women who came here as refugees, as immigrants, or their parents did, and what they had escaped from, and how grateful they are to this nation. That story had shaped them, and it was powerful. Over 30 times in the book of Deuteronomy, the people are told to remember and to teach the stories of God's past faithfulness. We have widely varying stories, don't we, of family and background and friends and places, and some of these are full of joy and achievement. Some are filled with pain and suffering, and most are a mix of both. As important as our stories are, Deuteronomy is a reminder that there is a bigger story. A story that is also ours. A story that we belong to. When we forget that bigger story, our lives can be reduced to the latest crisis, or the one that got away, or the person who disappointed us, or our fears for the future. We are being fed a distorted story these days. People of faith, our whole culture, we're offered a story of us versus them, good guys versus bad guys, winners versus losers, all sorts of voices and forces of various political and religious ideologies want us to believe that's our story. And it is adherence to that story that is why we have hungry families in America, why we have children in detention centers, why we have young people shot on the streets for no reason. Deuteronomy's message is pretty straightforward here. Ultimately, we all descend from a destitute vagrant. We are one people, and a mighty and loving God is our creator. Last Monday, when so many of you showed up, and so many other people of faith showed up at High Point Central and Guilford College and UNCG to stand up and turn your backs on hate, you were a living reminder of that bigger story that is ours. In so many ways, what we do as a church is to be that living reminder. This is not who we're intended to be. In South Central Utah, There is a forest of quaking aspen trees, their beautiful white trunks standing stock straight with gold leaves in the fall. Only in reality, it's one tree. It's called pando, which in Latin means spreading out. 106 acres. It is one of the world's largest single organisms because it is all one big root system underground with many shoots sticking out from it that are all trees, and it's estimated to be something like 80,000 years old. If you remove the dead leaves, the soil, and the twigs, and the stones, and you dug down, you'd be able to see that what looks like many individual trees is in fact all one tree. This is our season of Thanksgiving. It is a good time to stop and ask, what's in our basket and who can we share it with? On Thursday, bring your cranberries and your turkey and your green bean casseroles and your pies. But you'll no doubt also bring your stories of cherished family memories and old lingering wounds. Dig a little deeper. Bring with you the bigger story of how we are all connected. We all depend on one God. Maybe right now for you, giving thanks doesn't come easy. Take the time to find something for which you are grateful, even if it's for the fact that there is air in your lungs and a roof over your head. Because gratitude has a way of opening up new airways, new paths, new connections, and perspectives. When things were still so uncertain and unpredictable, that was precisely when the people of Israel were to go and give thanks and make an offering. Probably mentioned before that one of my family's traditions in Thanksgiving growing up, my father, who never drank, didn't like the taste of any of it, would buy a bottle of Manischewitz wine and sit it on the table. And we all had to have a sip of the world's worst wine. So for years after his death, we continued to have a bottle of Manischewitz, probably the same bottle, because nobody wanted to drink it. And I never understood this. But I think he was on to something. Maybe for this Thanksgiving, I'll buy some figs and put a bowl there on the table so I can remember again how far God has brought us, how much good there yet is around us, and how very much I am grateful for. Happy Thanksgiving. Amen.